Welcome to Age Management Medicine in the 21st Century with Dr. Harvey S. Bartnoff. All comments, views, and opinions expressed on this show are solely those of the host, guests, and callers. Now helping you with age management in the 21st century, here is Dr. Harvey S. Bartnoff.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Age Management Medicine in the 21st Century. This is your host, Dr. Harvey S. Bartnoff, Physician Director of California Longevity and Vitality Medical Institute. Today's topic is preserving your brain, how to maintain healthy brain function. My guest is Dr. David Perlmutter, and we'll introduce our guest in just a moment. But first, for all the listeners today, how many of you have walked into the next room to get your keys, and when you arrived, you thought, what did I come in here for? And how many of you have met someone at a business meeting or party, and 30 seconds later, you think to yourself, what was his name? How many of you have spouses, partners, or relatives with memory problems or Alzheimer's, stroke, attention deficit, or other brain conditions associated with memory problems? And how many of you are concerned that this could happen to you? We'll address these issues and more as we discuss preserving your brain. For first-time listeners, let's mention a little background about the program. This program is an informal series of discussions, questions, and answers about how to manage the aging process medically and successfully. We've chosen topics that we felt would be interesting, but that's where you, the audience, comes in. We want you to participate actively by calling in with questions, comments, or opinions to the toll-free number 1-888-335-5204. That's 1-888-335-5204 to ask a question of my guest or myself. Remember that no question is too silly or too stupid. The only way to get an answer or to learn is to ask the question. And it's very possible, even quite likely, that others have the same question you're thinking but might feel a little uncomfortable calling in. But that's okay. We're here to help, to provide honest answers without hype in a comfortable atmosphere. Before we jump into preserving your brain, let's just take a minute to explain what age management medicine is. This specialization in medicine is all about improving health span, improving quality of life, and delaying disease. It incorporates the established practice of preventive medicine, along with balanced hormone replacement using only bioidentical or natural hormones, and nutrition, supplements, lifestyle changes, and integrative medicine when appropriate. For more information, please go to my website, www.longevitymd.net. Well, loss of memory and loss of mental acuity is not necessarily natural and doesn't happen to everyone as they get on in their ages. And yet, many people can face difficulty with problems learning, perhaps problems with forgetting names, faces, loss of focus. If we look at who has some minor brain decline, by age 40, 2 out of 3 people will have some minor decline in brain function. By age 65, 1% of the population will have dementia, which is a decline in brain function. By age 75, 10% of people will have a decline in brain function as dementia. And by age 85, half, or 1 in 2. But looking at the glasses half full, that means 1 in 2 do not have dementia by 85. And so that means that loss of memory and loss of acuity is not necessarily a natural part of the aging process. So with that introduction, let me introduce my guest today. Dr. David Perlmutter is author of The Better Brain Book and BrainRecovery.com. He's a board-certified neurologist. He's founder and medical director of the Perlmutter Health Center in Naples, Florida. And his website is www.betterbrainbook.com. Dr. Perlmutter, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Harvey.
Tell us, what compelled you to write this book?
This book was really provoked by my experiences day to day in my office. You know, it's very difficult recognizing that so many elderly individuals and even middle-aged people are beginning to have exactly what you described, difficulties with brain function. The difficulty with me, the part that makes it so challenging, is knowing, as I do, that this is almost completely preventable. And you see these people virtually stumbling in here. with a whole list of various so-called Alzheimer's medicines that are ineffective for a disease which can actually be prevented. So it's sort of a different way of looking at this whole problem, and that is to say that we know, for example, from the highest level peer review studies, even published by the American Medical Association in January of this year, that there is a dramatic reduction of risk of Alzheimer's in people taking a few very simple non-prescription antioxidants, some specific antioxidants. And that is followed by an article published in the journal Lancet, which I'm sure you will agree is very well respected, in June of this year, that clearly stated that the world's most popular so-called Alzheimer's drug flatly does not work. So here we know we can prevent a disease, and it's a disease for which there is no pharmaceutical treatment. And it's almost as if, gee, you know, this sort of reminds me a little bit of what we're hearing on the debates, but it's almost as if this information has been kept to us so that certain individuals can profit from it, like manufacturers of these drugs. So that's really what caused the book to be written. We know that these techniques are powerfully effective. How do I know? We do it every day. We see people have improvements in their ability to remember things, in their speed of reaction, in their ability to do abstract thinking, to follow the plot of a book or a movie, to make change when they buy something, to calculate a tip, to balance their checkbook. We see these things improve dramatically when the brain is simply given the nutrients that it needs and the nutrients that help to reduce inflammation, which is really at the heart of all of this brain dysfunction.
Tell us more about that. What is the role of inflammation in brain problems?
Well, it looks as if inflammation is really fundamentally important in virtually all of the degenerative problems in the human body, be it the heart, the nervous system, the vascular system, the endocrine system, that ultimately what leads to failure of these systems is inflammation, really being at the cornerstone of things like stroke, even diabetes and cancer. And it was on the cover of Newsweek magazine just 6 weeks ago, inflammation being really the cornerstone for heart attacks, for coronary artery disease. And we now know, not that it's news, but for the past decade, that inflammation and the markers in the body, the chemicals that we can measure dealing with inflammation, are seen to be directly related to the brain in the Alzheimer's patient and the degenerating brain, and even more specifically, those chemicals involved with inflammation being directly involved in those parts of the brain that are most affected by a disease like Alzheimer's, the memory centers, an area of the brain called the hippocampus. Further, we know that various medications and nutrients that reduce inflammation are absolutely correlated with reduced risk of Alzheimer's and further reduced progression of Alzheimer's even after it has begun. It's why we know, for example, that people who are eating fish and have high levels of fish oil products in their bodies have a dramatically reduced risk of Alzheimer's by as much as 70%. So, you know, the oils that we eat are so critically important in reducing inflammation and putting out the fire. So my whole purpose in writing that book is to let people understand that it's not enough to simply live your life come what may, and then when a problem develops, hope that there is some sort of magic salvation in a pill that a doctor is going to provide you on a prescription pad, because quite clearly, at least in the case of Alzheimer's and other degenerative brain disorders, that doesn't exist. So we're putting our faith where it is not, where it does not belong. And absolutely what we need to emphasize is that lifestyle changes can dramatically affect a person's risk. I mean, you mentioned that a person's risk, if they live to be age 85, is a flip of a coin. It's 50-50. Well, we know we can do better. We know we can dramatically improve a person's odds at reducing his or her risk of a disease like Alzheimer's. And the purpose of the book is simply to present that information.
Tell us more about the study you alluded to in terms of avoiding or delaying or even treating the Alzheimer's. It was in the literature.
This study was published in January of this year in the journal Archives of Neurology, which is one of the specialty journals put out by the American Medical Association. They happened to have looked at a group of individuals, some 6,000 individuals, looking at them in the mid-1990s, looking at the foods that they were consuming, as well as nutritional supplements, and then reevaluated that group just recently. And they found that those individuals who simply took in higher levels of vitamin C and vitamin E, and I'm not talking about anything exotic here, nothing like ginkgo biloba or coenzyme Q10, good old vitamin C and vitamin E, their risk of developing Alzheimer's disease was reduced by 78%. And to me, that it's astounding, not only because of the magnitude of that number, but it's more astounding because that was not on the front page of every newspaper in the country and on the evening news, and it should have been. This is a disease that affects 4.5 million Americans, and as mentioned, will affect people age 85 at a risk rate of 50-50. So it's an astounding number put out by the American Medical Association. It's not as if this is something that I dreamed up or that someone overheard in a health food store. This was put out by perhaps the most conservative medical group in the country, and it's just a real shame that the general public doesn't become aware of this information, and yet we are lobbied every night when watching television that to give grandma an Alzheimer's pill because she's beginning to have difficulties reading bedtime stories to our grandchildren.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Tell us in your book when you talk about the rate of brain decline, and you talk about by the fact that by age 40, 2 out of 3 people will experience some minor brain decline. Tell us a little bit more about that, and what does it really mean? Is it a medical diagnosis, and what's it a foreshadowing of?
Well, it's quite clear that, you know, our peak years are in our 20s and up to maybe age 30, and that the entire body begins to decline thereafter for various reasons. Ultimately, what happens, the real messengers of this decline are chemicals called free radicals, which are actually what not only destroys the tissue directly, but I think more importantly with reference to the brain, destroys the part of the cell that makes energy, which we call the mitochondria. So, you know, after a time, there becomes such damage to these energy parts of the cell that the cells are just not able to function appropriately. What damages the cells, again, are chemicals called free radicals. In our bodies, naturally, we have chemicals called antioxidants, which protect against free radical-mediated damage. We get our antioxidants from the foods that we eat, and some of our antioxidant protection is actually manufactured within our bodies. The problem is that we live in we have a lifestyle that creates free radicals with high levels of stress and various things in our environment, so it's really incumbent upon us to keep our antioxidant level as functional as possible.
Interesting. Well, we're going to continue talking about how we can prevent brain decline, how we can prevent memory loss as we come back in just a minute, so don't go away. We'll be right back.
Are you looking for an age management program that will seek out and treat diseases and conditions early on, before they become bigger problems? Visit www.drbartnoff.com today for complete individualized programs geared towards longevity and health. With programs ranging from proper nutrition to safe and natural hormone therapy, there is sure to be a treatment that fits your needs. If you're a baby boomer or beyond and would like more information or an evaluation, visit www.drbartnoff.com today. Once again, that's www.drbartnoff.com. Visit and get on the track to a healthier and happier life with more vitality.
This is VoiceAmerica.com, America's voice.
We now return to Age Management Medicine in the 21st Century. If you would like to participate in the discussion, call toll-free at 1-888-335-5204. That's 1-888-335-5204. Now back to the show. Here's Dr. Harvey S. Bartnoff.
Welcome back. Our topic is preserving your brain, and my guest today is Dr. David Perlmutter, author of The Better Brain Book, and his website is www.betterbrainbook.com. David, tell us a little bit more what we were talking about just before the break in terms of these energy producers of the cells the so-called mitochondria, and why that is really so important in maintaining brain health and actually overall health.
You know, it is absolutely fundamental because, and I don't mean to get too complex scientifically with your listeners, but you know, I know they're going to get this, and that is simply that within each neuron, there is an energy-producing part called the mitochondria, and this is really the motor. This is what runs the day-to-day activities of the cell, getting rid of waste and letting the cell do what it needs to do, which is to transmit information. So it's the power source, and in reality, there are thousands of mitochondria within each neuron, but that is fundamentally the key for maintaining the health of that cell. When the mitochondria fail, when the cell can no longer produce adequate amounts of energy, then the cell begins to decay and lose its function, and ultimately puts into effect a pre-programmed fail-safe mechanism that actually leads to cell death. We call that apoptosis. So it's absolutely critical that we do everything we can to maintain the health of the neuron by allowing adequate energy production. How do we do that? Well, number one, the way that these mitochondria produce energy requires that there's an adequate substrate, an adequate place for that energy to be produced, and that is made, developed, and constructed from the types of fats that we consume in our diets. The best fats for mitochondrial function come from fish oil. That's why number one, I believe, in all of the nutrients that we recommend for people to maintain brain health is high-quality fish oil. And I say high quality because that's very important. There are many substandard fish oils on the market that are available at many of these large warehouse-style grocery stores and shopping areas that are poor quality because they are not only processed inappropriately, but also contain respectable amounts of pesticides and mercury. So we've got to pay attention to that. A high-quality fish oil is critical for brain health. Then we have to keep that fat from being damaged in the brain or oxidized, and that's where the antioxidants come into play, like vitamin C and vitamin E. There's also a core group of nutrients that are critically important for enhancing brain function and preserving brain function, and these are a little bit more exotic, but they go by the names of things like ginkgo biloba that many of your listeners have heard of, coenzyme Q10, very, very important for brain health, and even something called lipoic acid, a critically important nutrient that all of our adults should be consuming, adding to their programs because it's so critical for brain health, nerve health, reduces risk of diabetes, complications, and things like that. The other thing, the other side of the coin, I think, that really needs to be looked at is a simple laboratory analysis that I think all adults should add to their general physical examination. And I would challenge your listeners to ask themselves this simple question. When you last went to your doctor for your annual checkup, and you had your heart checked, and you had your cholesterol checked, and men had their prostate checked, and women had their pap smears, what was done to check the health of your brain? And I would submit that most of your patients would be befuddled at that point, recognizing that, in fact, doctors don't do anything to check the health of the brain and to look at the risk factors for brain health. And I think that now that you think about it, that's a big mistake because we really depend so much upon our brains to enjoy life and to be healthy. You know, what good is it to live to be age 85 years if your brain isn't functioning appropriately? And so fundamental in a brain health examination that every one of your listeners should ask his or her doctor for is a simple blood test called homocysteine. Now, homocysteine should become a family word. Everyone should know it. It should be very common. It's a simple laboratory test like cholesterol, but it's directly linked to increased risk of heart disease, stroke, and fundamentally, Alzheimer's disease as well. So what I'm saying now is that just like cholesterol is taken to be an indicator of risk for heart disease, which it is to some degree, we know that homocysteine is dramatically associated with risk of brain degenerative disorders. The very good news is that homocysteine is so easy to lower to an acceptable level. And homocysteine, we typically see patients in our office with homocysteine levels from 15 to 20, even 25. The scary news is that, according to the New England Journal of Medicine, published February the 14th of 2002, a homocysteine level of just 14 doubles a person's risk of Alzheimer's disease. we know that we can lower homocysteine actually quite easily by just taking some B-complex vitamins that anyone can get at the health food store, no prescription needed. But you need to have your homocysteine level checked to determine if, in fact, you have to increase your B vitamins. And again, this is a simple laboratory analysis that any doctor's office will be should be happy to run for you, that can be done in any laboratory. It's inexpensive, but the implications of elevated homocysteine are absolutely profound, even beyond brain health, representing a significant risk for heart problems as well. Another thing that we talk about in the Better Brain book is the fact that countless commonly used drugs, both prescription and over-the-counter, directly reduce B vitamins and therefore can raise homocysteine. These drugs that raise homocysteine can therefore increase a person's risk for Alzheimer's. And it's unfortunate, but some of the most commonly used, even over-the-counter medications, can reduce our B vitamins, like the over-the-counter acid-blocking drugs that we see advertised on the evening news. Everybody who has an upset stomach is supposed to take this drug or that drug to block stomach acid. Anticonvulsants, blood pressure pills, diabetes pills, cholesterol pills, these things can all have a very detrimental effect upon the brain. What we talk about in the book is simply, if you have to take one of these medications for whatever reasons, here are the things you can do to reduce the dangerous side effects as these side effects relate to brain health. That's a short answer to your question.
Okay. And I know you talk about other tests, of course, in your book that are important to do. And, of course, you talk about how high cholesterol itself is a risk factor for earlier brain decline, high blood pressure, risk factors for heart disease, of course, are similar to risk factors for stroke and diabetes, measuring blood sugar and perhaps blood insulin and so forth are all important, and you talk about that.
Yes, a couple of things, though, that also, I think, really directly relate to brain health, and they include a measurement of inflammation. As we talked earlier, inflammation is the key to brain degeneration in Alzheimer's and other degenerative disorders like Parkinson's. And we follow the degree of inflammation by doing a simple measurement of something called C-reactive protein, that's CRP. And again, this is a simple test that every doctor knows about, and it directly relates to brain health, and really, everyone should have a C-reactive protein blood test. Very simple. Another test that we're now learning is so fundamentally important in brain health is a test called anti-gliadin antibody, or anti-gliadin antibody. And this is a simple test that's been done for years and years to screen for people who have a problem called celiac disease, where they can't tolerate certain foods like wheat, oats, barley, and rye. Well, we now know that sensitivity, as measured by the anti-gliadin antibody test, relates to far more than just the gut. These people have far more problems than just digestive disorders, and at times have just exclusively brain problems, coordination difficulties, speech difficulties, nerve problems, because they're on a diet that they shouldn't be on, because they're sensitive to wheat, oats, barley, and rye. It's a simple blood test. It's called anti-gliadin antibody, and again, every doctor's office in the country could do it. It's very simple, and it's inexpensive. I think the last study that I would say is mandatory in terms of a brain screening procedure panel would be a test called urinary lipid peroxides. And this is simply an at-home test that people can take to measure their antioxidant capacity. In other words, how well is their body putting out the fire of the brain? How effective are there antioxidants? And again, this is an easy test that doctors can do. People can actually go online and order the test themselves. There is a website. It's called ulptest.com. People can go to that website and order a test and get a feeling for where they are in terms of how effective their antioxidants are in terms of protecting their brains.
And that perhaps taking some of the supplements you would talk about would bring those abnormal results, if they were abnormal, back into a normal range and decrease the risk of brain inflammation and decrease the risk of brain decline.
Exactly. This urinary lipid peroxide test, again, the website is ulptest.com. We like to keep the urine lipid peroxide studies at about 9 or lower. But I will tell you, so frequently we see these numbers off the charts from people having lifestyles that don't provide them appropriate levels of brain protective and heart protective antioxidants. Really, antioxidants are absolutely the key. And so often I hear, when my patients see other doctors when they're traveling, and doctors say, what else are you taking? What are you taking any supplements? And they show them the supplements that they're taking, that doctors will say, oh, that's not necessary. But, you know, and even be derogatory about it. I've often said that people are down on what they're not up on. And certainly, in this day and age, the fundamental importance of antioxidants that we take in our diets and as nutritional supplements cannot be overstated. I mean, if people are listening to your program to preserve themselves and to reduce the ravages of aging, then a key player is absolutely going to be antioxidants, and I'm certain that I'm not the first person to be on the program to talk about it.
Yeah, that's very true, and we certainly use them in my practice as well, and I think physicians who downplay it and poo-poo it are just misinformed.
Neurology, you know, neurologists are really probably the last people to come on board with reference to antioxidants. We've been using one specific antioxidant called coenzyme Q10 for the past 12 years in our Parkinson's patients. And lo and behold, in October of 2002, a study was published that demonstrated that Parkinson's patients who take coenzyme Q10 decline at a rate 47% slower over a one-year period compared to those who didn't take this over-the-counter non-prescription antioxidant. Think about it. If a drug company could develop a drug that would slow the progression of Parkinson's by 47%, you can be sure that every neurologist would be guilty of malpractice if he or she didn't write a prescription for it. But yet, here's the data published in the journal Neurology, which is the journal from the American Academy of Neurology, showing this progression being slowed by 47%, and yet most neurologists don't pay any attention to it because it's a nutritional supplement. And what a travesty that is for poor patients who are suffering from this debilitating illness.
Mm-hmm. And just as a tag onto what you said in terms of certain medications that will lower coenzyme Q10, the so-called statin drugs for lowering cholesterol lower CoQ10, and it's my understanding that one of the pharmaceutical companies that has their patents actually has a patent that combines coenzyme Q10 along with their particular statin drug, so that when this becomes perhaps more popular, or that they could perhaps make a profit, they'll go ahead and put it out on the market. So,
well, you know, if that's the case, and you're right, because that is in the works, what about all the other statin drugs that do not have coenzyme Q10 or don't even carry the recommendation that people should take CoQ10? I mean, what happens there? I mean, when we deplete people of coenzyme Q10, we're depleting them of a very important antioxidant, which has effects not only upon the brain, but on the heart as well. So, I mean, it's very critical. In my book, you know, I go through hundreds of drugs and talk about what they can do in terms of lowering coenzyme Q10. I mean, there are a lot of drugs, many antidepressants and blood pressure pills, and in addition to the drugs that you mentioned, the statin drugs can lower CoQ10.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, when we come back, we're going to talk about how Viagra may be good for erections, but may not be so good for the brain. Don't go away. We'll be right back as we talk about preserving your brain with Dr. David Perlmutter. This is VoiceAmerica.com, America's Voice.
Are you looking for an age management program that will seek out and treat diseases and conditions early on before they become bigger problems? Visit www.drbartnoff.com today for complete individualized programs geared towards longevity and health. With programs ranging from proper nutrition to safe and natural hormone therapy, there is sure to be a treatment that fits your needs. If you're a baby boomer or beyond and would like more information or an evaluation, visit www.drbartnoff.com today. Once again, that's www.drbartnoff.com. Visit and get on the track to a healthier and happier life with more vitality.
www.voiceamerica.com, America's voice.
Welcome back to Age Management Medicine in the 21st Century. Call in with questions and comments at 1-888-335-3255. 1-800-324-5524. Now let's rejoin Dr. Harvey S. Bartnoff for another segment of Age Management Medicine in the 21st Century.
Welcome back to Preserving Your Brain. My guest today is Dr. David Perlmutter, author of The Better Brain Book. And his website is www.betterbrainbook.com. Dr. Perlmutter, David, let's talk a little bit about ADHD and depression and how these are affected by things that people may take by mouth.
I actually didn't hear that last part of your question.
The question about ADHD and depression and how this may be affected by nutrition and supplements as well.
Well, that's really a wonderful question because there is no doubt that we are hugely overusing not only the so-called stimulant drugs for ADHD, but also antidepressants in our children. It's absolutely pathetic situation that in many public schools, as many as 25 to 30% of the children are now on medication. I mean, what does that tell us? 90% of these stimulant drugs manufactured on the planet are used in the United States of America. And again, the degree of use of antidepressant medications in children has increased 300% in the past 5 years. And this comes on the heels of warnings about specific antidepressant medications actually being associated with profoundly increased risk of suicide in children. So we've got to take a step back and say, gee, is this really what we want to do? I mentioned to you earlier about how important the essential fatty acids are. Well, it turns out that the receptors in the brain, you know, we talk about brain chemistry. These drugs work by increasing things like serotonin and epinephrine and dopamine, various brain chemistry, brain chemicals. But the bottom line is these kids with ADHD are not deficient in brain chemistry. That is a myth. That is a myth that's been propagated in the literature put out by the manufacturers to teachers as to how these drugs work and what the problem is. According to the American Medical Association, the fundamental mechanism of ADHD has never been elucidated. And yet, when teachers are asked for information about ADHD, they're told that there's some deficiency of neurotransmitters that can be fixed with the various kinds of drugs. Well, the point is, we can absolutely enhance the way brain transmission works in children by giving their brains a specific substrate for the chemistry to work, and that is, again, DHA from fish oil. Study after study has demonstrated profound improvements in children's school performance with decreased rates of depression in children receiving fish oil supplementation. And it's not just because you have a guest today on Voice America Radio telling people that that is the case. It is the case because this is substantiated by countless peer-reviewed studies published in our most well-respected journals. There are textbooks written on the topic. But yet the information that ultimately trickles down to parents is that really coming from teachers, and that is that little Johnny needs to be on Ritalin or another drug. And in point of fact, we don't know the long-term consequences of these drugs. And we do know that there is no downside to finding the specific nutritional supplements that can make the brain work appropriately. It goes beyond, however, supplying the right nutritional supplements. That goes a long way. We also know that children have sensitivities that we can easily identify. I mentioned earlier in your program a specific test that we like to do as part of a brain audit, and that's a blood test looking for sensitivity to gliadin, anti-gliadin antibody, a wheat sensitivity study. We have treated countless children, not only by putting them on the right dosages of fish oil, but by eliminating certain foods to which they were sensitive, and seen remarkable things that we have documented, that I have published in my books, about children being able to get right back into school, make wonderful grades, and indeed start to excel. Interestingly, a lot of these kids with so-called ADHD are high IQ kids, higher than average IQ children, but they're static on the line. And they can't concentrate. And we can absolutely help that, number one, by giving them the right supplementation protocols, and number two, eliminating those foods to which they are sensitive. It's not hard to do. I've just submitted a new book proposal accepted by a publisher dealing with building the perfect brain from birth to age 5 years, in which we are going to outline exactly what parents need to do to create that perfect brain that is resistant to these problems, for which that child will not be told that he or she needs a drug. I mean, what a message to send to a child in a world where we're worried about drug abuse, that drugs are bad, but then again, here, you must take this pill every day and be stigmatized by your classmates, I might add. It doesn't have to be that way, and, you know, we're going to change the world with this paradigm. We're going to make the right supplements available to children, the right information available to parents, because this abuse of our children at the hands of the pharmaceutical industry, I think, is criminal.
And, of course, ADHD, Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder, for people who aren't familiar with the abbreviation, attention deficit can persist into adulthood as well, and people can derive benefits by supplements in adulthood as well, in terms of DHEA, as well as an excellent vitamin supplement regimen.
Well, without a doubt. And, you know, it's interesting how all of a sudden, in the past 2 years, this has become a topic that people talk about, and that is that adults have ADHD. And why do we know that? We know that because we've been told, they're advertising this now on television, if you don't like waiting in a line, if you get anxious when you're in traffic, if you forget people's phone numbers or can't multitask, then you may have signs of adult ADHD. Call this toll-free number for free information. And what you do, you know, that of course leads into taking a drug. So this whole idea that that huge numbers of our population, adult population, are suffering from ADHD has been created. It is a myth. It is normal to be anxious and a little bit concerned when you're waiting in a line, or to have difficulty concentrating on three things at once in our busy society. That's the way it is. It is a bit of an overload of our brains. And to think that adults who can't wait in line and get anxious in crowds, therefore have ADHD and must take a drug, it's such a thing that's put on adults that they now think that they're deficient, and the only way out is to fall into the recommendation of the shaded recommendation of the pharmaceutical company and start taking a drug. What a terrible thing to perpetuate in our society. We don't need more drugs. We don't know the downsides of these drugs long term, and we do know that specific nutritional supplements can create a brain that works much more efficiently.
Good. I certainly agree. Let's take an email question that came in from Marjorie from San Diego, California. Marjorie says, I remember that former President Reagan always had a jelly bean jar on his desk. Could that have contributed to his getting Alzheimer's? What do you think, David?
Well, at the Institute for Functional Medicine annual meeting that was held in Vancouver in the spring, I don't know if you were there, Harvey, but that was actually the topic of my plenary session, and that is the role of diabetes and sugar in brain degeneration. My topic was not Ronald Reagan, but oddly enough, I had a slide of his daughter talking about him and the jelly beans, etc. And as a matter of fact, there's a direct relationship between sugar, diabetes, and Alzheimer's. We know that sugars in the body, when elevated, can actually change brain proteins and cause the formation of something called advanced glycosylated end products, which is abbreviated AGE, interestingly enough. These changes that take place to the proteins in the brain from elevated blood sugar dramatically increase brain inflammation. And as I've indicated earlier, that is the cornerstone for all of these degenerative conditions. We know that if you are diabetic, especially if you're insulin diabetic, that your risk of Alzheimer's is increased. Insulin-dependent diabetes have a risk of Alzheimer's 400% increased above non-diabetic individuals. And again, there are various reasons for that, but primarily it's because of changes to brain proteins by the elevated blood sugar. So what's the take-home message here is that diabetes is rampant in our society. It's been estimated by some that as many as 85% of adults will ultimately carry the diagnosis of type 2 diabetes. If there is, in fact, this direct relationship to diabetes, of Alzheimer's and diabetes, then that's going to be a huge number. And so we can prevent diabetes. Everyone knows how. We have to keep our weights within the norms. We have to exercise more. We have to eat appropriately. Therefore, diabetes is preventable. There are now 14 million diabetics in this country. And if diabetes is preventable, that sure goes a long way to preventing Alzheimer's.
And certainly jelly beans are not the only type of food product that will raise blood sugar very high. A lot of our junk food, of course, is processed foods, in terms of carbohydrates, and that cakes, cookies, candies, and so forth, sodas, all raise the blood sugar very, very high, and that can increase weight gain, increase the risk of diabetes and pre-diabetes. So certainly...
Yes, and again, and that does definitely lead back to the so-called ADHD issue. We know that individuals with high blood sugars, their brains don't function as well, and they may not even know they have high blood sugar, even modest elevation of blood sugar before so-called threshold for diabetes can affect brain function. And again, you know, these are the people that some would say, oh, they must have adult ADHD and therefore need medication. You know, some people estimate that as many as 3 to 5% of adults in the United States have ADHD, but only so-called 15% of them know that they have it. And, you know, that's information that comes from the University of Rochester at a recent symposium. But the point is that they don't, in my opinion. They don't have ADHD. They have treatable issues with reference to brain function that we need to unravel and not cover up the problem by putting these adults on medications.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Let's take a question that came in by email from Mary Jane. She's 40 from Sacramento, California. Mary Jane says, I heard that underarm deodorants can cause memory problems and Alzheimer's disease. Is this a myth? She says she has bad underarm body odor. What could she use instead?
Well, Mary Jane, it's actually a very, very good question. And I will tell you, amongst my peers, neurologist peers, that that whole paradigm of relating aluminum to Alzheimer's, I think, is looked upon almost as a myth. Well, in reality, the studies have been quite conclusive that there is a strong relationship between aluminum exposure and risk for Alzheimer's. In one study that came out of Toronto, they found a significantly higher risk of Alzheimer's, 200 to 300% increased risk of Alzheimer's in people drinking the Toronto municipal water known to be high in aluminum. Aluminum is used, actually, believe it or not, as a purification technique for municipal water systems. So anything that exposes us to aluminum, be it aluminum hydroxide in antiperspirants or aluminum chlorhydrate in antiperspirants or even aluminum in dandruff shampoos can theoretically raise our aluminum levels and is clearly related to risk of Alzheimer's.
And
now,
go ahead.
If you have an issue with underarm odor, I would say get a deodorant, but not an antiperspirant. There's a difference. An antiperspirant containing aluminum will stop the sweating, but doesn't really stop the odor. A deodorant that you can get at the health food store does not contain aluminum and will reduce your risk of having underarm odor. The other thing we recognize is clearly underarm odor is directly related to a person's diet. Those who have higher sugars and meat in their diets have been demonstrated to have much higher risk of having underarm odor. Now, the other thing to recognize is so many medications are full of aluminum. Many antacids that people are taking over the counter are just loaded with aluminum. Our bodies can process between 20 and 40 milligrams of aluminum a day, because aluminum is actually a very common element in the Earth's crust. We've been eating it for 6 million years. But that's our threshold. Above that, we begin to retain aluminum. And some antacid tablets that are so commonly used may contain well over 100 to 200 milligrams of aluminum. So we've got to be careful.
Right, and of course that would be the aluminum hydroxide form of oral antacids, and there are other forms of antacids. Although, as David mentioned, some of the antacids themselves may lead to decline of certain nutrients that we need to maintain a good antioxidant status in the bloodstream.
So, yes.
Yes. With that, we're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about how Viagra may be good for erections, but may not be so good for brain health. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Are you looking for an age management program that will seek out and treat diseases and conditions early on, before they become bigger problems? Visit www.drbartnoff.com today for complete individualized programs geared towards longevity and health. With programs ranging from proper nutrition to safe and natural hormone therapy, there is sure to be a treatment that fits your needs. If you're a baby boomer or beyond and would like more information or an evaluation, visit www.drbartnoff.com today. Once again, that's www.drbartnoff.com. Visit and get on the track to a healthier and happier life with more vitality.
This is VoiceAmerica.com, America's voice.
We now return to Age Management Medicine in the 21st Century. If you would like to participate in the discussion, call toll-free at 1-888-335-5204. That's 1-888-335-5204. Now back to the show. Here's Dr. Harvey S. Bartnoff.
Welcome back to Preserving Your Brain. My guest today is Dr. David Perlmutter, author of the Better Brain Book, and his website is www.betterbrainbook.com. And he's also the author of BrainRecovery.com, and of course these are both available at Amazon and other bookstores. David, tell us about your concern regarding Viagra, which of course is a prescription drug advertised at the Super Bowl and others, of course, that's used for erectile dysfunction, and how it works and how that relates to your concern about decline in brain function.
One of the most fundamental free radicals or chemicals that damages the brain when antioxidants are not effective is something called nitric oxide. We don't want elevated nitric oxide levels in the brain. How Viagra works is it takes advantage of one of the other effects of nitric oxide. Nitric oxide actually dilates arteries. So we know that when you give somebody a medication that will raise nitric oxide level, yes, it will dilate arteries. It will allow better circulation in the heart, for example, and may allow better erections. In fact, it probably does. But the downside that we are concerned about is the fact that it may also increase nitric oxide in the brain, and in so doing, put people at increased risk for other problems related to damage to the brain because of that free radical production. Elevated nitric oxide is seen in a variety of neurodegenerative conditions. You can actually stain for nitrotyrosine, which is a byproduct of the of nitric oxide in the brain. And if you do that in an Alzheimer's patient, you can see profoundly increased levels of nitric oxide activity in the memory centers of the Alzheimer's brain and higher levels of nitric oxide when you measure it. So it is a concern. And, you know, people just will capriciously use medications and not really think through on the biochemistry. And it's a big concern. And in addition, we know that so popular these days are so-called secretagogues, and these are supplements designed to increase a person's normal or latent production of human growth hormone. The problem with these secretagogues is they are based upon an amino acid called arginine, and arginine similarly will increase nitric oxide, and again, makes us wonder about the fact that we may be doing a patient harm by increasing their arginine and therefore their nitric oxide and leading to damage to the brain.
Very interesting. So I guess the take-home message there would be use the least amount, the lowest dose, and not as frequent as they might otherwise, perhaps.
Yes, and you know, do I have patients for whom I recommend and I write prescriptions for Viagra? Absolutely, I do. But I'm careful to say, look, this is something you should not be using every day. There may be side effects from this long-term that we're just not sure about, so, you know, use it with discretion. And indeed, if you are, it's good to make sure you have good levels of brain antioxidants on board. Make sure you're taking coenzyme Q10 and N-acetylcysteine and the right essential fatty acids, fish oil, and things like that. Then I feel better at the end of the day knowing that, well, if they're using a potentially brain-damaging drug, that at least they're doing their very best to protect themselves.
Interesting. Let's take an email question that came in from Ned. Ned is 28 from Scottsdale, Arizona. Ned says, organic foods supposedly have no pesticides but are much more expensive. Is the extra money worth it to save my brain and body?
Well, the answer to that question is without a doubt. I don't believe, and I've done a lot of comparison shopping, that the price is that significantly increased. But it's not just because these are pesticide-free foods. It's also because they're nutritionally much better for you. Study after study has been done to confirm the fact that the level of trace minerals and antioxidant vitamins and bioflavonoids are much higher in organically grown foods than they are in the typical mass-produced store types of foods. Now, I also say that it's worth the money because we know now there is a direct relationship between pesticide exposure and risk for Parkinson's disease. And again, it's not just because your guest says it on the radio today. That was published in the Journal of the American Medical Association, that there's a huge increased risk of Parkinson's in people who have high levels of pesticides in their bodies and history of exposure. So absolutely, organic is the way to go, and the more people that ask their grocers for organics, the more will be available, and the prices will come down.
Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit more about contamination in foods, other things that might, in terms of preservatives and so forth.
I think probably the biggest issue in foods that I would, the point I would like to make is the type of fats that people are consuming. You know, your brain is 70% fat, and it is constructed from the fats that we get in our diets. I mean, where else would it come from? The brain is inefficient when it's constructed out of hydrogenated or modified or saturated fats that are so common, and trans fats that are so common in foods that we get at the grocery store, baked goods, etc. The reason that they make these fats and put them in these foods is because they last a lot longer. I mean, you know, that cooking oil that you see on the shelf of the grocery store could have been there for 2 years and still look perfectly clear and wonderful. The reason it lasts so long and doesn't go rancid is because it's dead. It's been modified, it's been hydrogenated and saturated and changed in such a way that it can't go rancid because now it's dead. But those are the types of fats that build a poor quality brain, a brain that is less resistant to disease, less resistant to decline in function, and much more likely to experience inflammation and be damaged by free radicals. So the way to build the wrong brain is to give it the wrong material. You put the right quality of gas in your automobile, and you should do the same thing to your body if you want a brain that is not only functioning well, but down the road is going to be more resistant to damage and degenerative diseases.
Tell us how that relates to, let's say, these artificial sweeteners and MSG, and how that would relate to brain decline.
Well, MSG, of course, is not an artificial sweetener. It's a flavor enhancer because it stimulates just a specific receptor on the tongue. The problem is that glutamate, which is what MSG is, monosodium glutamate, is the brain transmitter, what's called an excitatory brain transmitter, that is related to every neurodegenerative condition you can think of, be it Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, multiple sclerosis. Glutamate is what stimulates the cell to increase its concentration of calcium, which damages the energy production capacity of that neuron. So we absolutely need to reduce our exposure to glutamate. I mean, our brain cells are constantly doing their best to keep glutamate out and to keep that stimulation down. So things like monosodium glutamate are very worrisome, and other things like aspartate, because they're so closely related to glutamate. And aspartate can be produced from aspartame in the brain, in the human body, aspartame being a very commonly used artificial sweetener. And I would challenge any of your listeners who are thinking that maybe this isn't so to go onto any of their search engines on their computer and put in FDA and aspartame, and they'll be amazed by what they find in terms of the number of reports to the Food and Drug Administration of people having severe reactions to aspartame, experiencing migraine headaches, epileptic seizures, and things like that. It's a very, very worrisome proposition. I don't want to get into it, but the story behind how aspartame received its FDA approval will cause the hair on the back of your neck to rise up.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And MSG, of course, is used in certain of the Asian food cuisines as a flavor enhancer, for those of you who aren't familiar with that. Tell us a little bit about brain decline and its association with cigarettes and cocaine and recreational drugs.
Well, perhaps the most worrisome issue these days is a drug called ecstasy, and there are really countless articles that have come out now and demonstrating that ecstasy is associated with permanent injury to the brain, lifelong. Even use of ecstasy once is demonstrated on specific types of brain scans called PET scans to permanently alter the way the brain functions, and obviously in a negative way. So, you know, it's really up to us to redouble our efforts to make this information known to teenagers, and that is that this is something that will set the stage for a lifelong issue, not only with respect to dependency on drugs like that and addiction, but also in terms of changing the way the brain functions, irreparably damaging the receptors. Other things like cigarettes, of course, the brain is very sensitive to carbon monoxide, very sensitive to nicotine, very sensitive to low oxygen tension, and it's obviously a huge issue. Other drugs that kids are using these days, of course, crack cocaine and its effects upon the memory centers of the brain have been well documented. But, you know, again, this isn't new information. It's stuff that people have suspected for a long, long time. But it's up to us who are in the public spotlight in forums such as this to make that information known. I think to scare a kid and say, look, this is permanent brain damage, is a good thing to do, and to let them know that this is a decision that they're going to make that will have ultimately lifelong consequences.
Well, we've talked about a lot of things today, and I think the take-home message is that it is really possible to prevent or delay memory loss and certain chronic brain conditions, and that would be screening in the blood, looking for risk factors that our guest, Dr. Perlmutter, talked about. We've talked about how different over-the-counter medications and prescription medications can affect levels of antioxidants that might become too low, and that itself would put our brains at risk of decline. We've talked about how food and nutrition is very, very important, and fish oil and maintaining a good brain health and good body health is important in that regard. We've talked about how various types of supplements are important as well, coenzyme Q, vitamin B12, and a number of other supplements. We didn't get too much of a chance to talk about exercise, stress reduction, and so forth, but at this point, let me thank my guest, Dr. David Perlmutter. His book is called The Better Brain Book, and it is available at Amazon.com and online at www.betterbrainbook.com. Thank you, David, very much.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you.
And we'll be back next week at 1 p.m. on Wednesday. Please be sure to join us. I would like to thank the producers, engineers, and support staff at SurfNet Media. Thank you to all the listeners and email questioners for participating in Age Management Medicine in the 21st Century. This is your host, Dr. Harvey S. Bartonoff, wishing all of you longevity and vitality. Till next week, bye for now.
You've been listening to Age Management Medicine.